Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, March 20th, 2021, weekend edition. Section A, Immigration. Craddock. Water issues at migrant camp are human tragedy. TCEQ flags facility in Midland County with do not use advisory due to unknown quality of drinking water produced at the existing facility. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. The problems at the migrant camp inside Midland County continue to mount. On Friday, state officials said the former man camp turned into a federal facility for juvenile migrants does not have safe water. The Texas Commission of Environmental Quality sent notice to Governor Greg Abbott and State Representative Tom Craddock that the facility leased by the Biden administration for unaccompanied minors has failed to secure safe water. That was how Craddock described his communication with the TCEQ. The Biden administration has taken in these children and failed to provide them with a minimum of safe water to drink and bathe in, Craddock offered in a statement. I consider this to be a human tragedy. With the lack of clean water, we are jeopardizing the health and safety of these children. The facility will now have to transport water for these unaccompanied minors for an extended period. Unsafe water creates a living situation to which these children should not be exposed. I appreciate TCEQ for acting quickly in the best interest of these children. I implore the Biden administration to secure our borders. The Reporter Telegram sent emails to the TCEQ about the Cotton Logistics Facility Wednesday night, asking if there was a adequate approved and permitted water and wastewater facilities for 677 individuals, and whether the federal government selected a facility that did not meet public water supply standards to house minors. As of press time, the TCEQ was still preparing a response to all the questions related to its water supply and sewer system. The TCEQ officials did not offer this statement to the Reporter Telegram on Friday evening. The TCEQ earlier today required Cotton Logistics, Inc. to issue a do not use advisory due to the unknown quality of drinking water produced at the existing facility, Cotton Logistics Midland Man Camp. The do not use advisory is being issued in abundance of caution to protect against possible risks from water ingestion. The water may be used for flushing of toilets and clothes washing, but should not be used for human consumption purposes, such as drinking, cooking, bathing, or washing hands. Cotton Logistics is preparing a plan, which must be approved by TCEQ, to haul potable water to the site using a TCEQ-approved water hauler. About permits that the owner of the property has at the facility southwest of the city of Midland, the TCEQ responded with the following. Drinking water. TCEQ Water Supply Division records indicate the system registered at the address provided is not an active public water system. In October 2017, TCEQ received a request to register Pines RV Park as a proposed public water system, which included plans and specifications to drill a well to service the park. In January 2018, the applicant notified TCEQ that they would not be drilling the well to serve the park and were no longer pursuing the public water system. Wastewater. Cotton Logistics, Inc. and the Pines RV Park have a domestic wastewater discharge permit. Cotton Logistics has not responded to multiple calls from the Reporter Telegram about the decision to lease the facility to the federal government or about possible water and sewer issues at the Midland County location, One Lodge, Midland. On its website, Cotton Logistics is listed as being based in Katy. It also lists having locations in other Texas cities, including Pecos. The news of the water issues adds to the problems the Biden administration is having with the facility in Midland. Those problems, according to Reporter Telegram and Associated Press reports, include more than 50 COVID-positive tests, the lack of Spanish-speaking on site, the lack of new clothes for the migrants, and no case managers on site to begin begin processing the miner's release to family elsewhere in the U.S. The Biden administration has been an abject failure when it comes to ensuring the safety of unaccompanied minors who cross our border, Abbott offered in a statement. The conditions unaccompanied minors face in these federally run facilities is unacceptable and inhumane. From a lack of safe drinking water in one location to a COVID-19 outbreak in another, the Biden administration has no excuse for subjecting these children to these kinds of conditions. President Biden's refusal to address the border crisis is not only enabling criminal actors like human traffickers and smugglers, but it is exposing innocent, unaccompanied children to illness and potentially unsafe living conditions. The administration must act now to keep these children safe, secure, and secure our border and end this humanitarian crisis. Health officials are cautiously optimistic after a year of COVID, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. As of Friday, Midland health staff have been battling the COVID-19 pandemic for 1 year. And while many Texans bucked safety protocols after the end of the statewide mask order and occupancy restrictions, health officials are hopeful following the success of vaccines, but worry about the consequences of declaring victory too soon. Those on the front lines of the pandemic are cautiously optimistic that vaccinations will help the community reach herd immunity, said Dr. Larry Wilson, Midland Hospital's chief medical officer. However, there's a sense of foreboding that there may be more yet to come. We've been burned two or three times through this, Wilson said. Where things got bad, they got better. They got bad, they get better. He said health officials are concerned the combination of spring break and Governor Greg Abbott's reversal of the mask mandate may create more surges. Midland Health has administered about 65,000 first doses of the vaccine, though many of those have gone to other communities and non-residents traveling to Midland for the vaccine. Wilson said about 20 to 25% of Midlanders have received an initial dose. When those who have had the virus are added to the residents who received the vaccine, the county is close to some level of herd immunity, though not there yet. He said for every confirmed case, there are likely 4 to 5 unconfirmed cases, meaning about 75,000 residents have probably had COVID-19. But there's still several unknowns with this novel coronavirus, including how long antibodies last and if booster shots will be needed to retain immunity. Normally, there's some experience somewhere that we can pull from, whether it's Ebola, where they would see what was going on in Africa. We could compare, said Val Sparks. But this was just so widespread and so many patients so fast. We really were not prepared at the time that it started. Now that they have experienced a pandemic, the hospital will keep personal protective equipment like masks, gowns, face shields in large supply. Sparks said early on in 2020, some hospitals sewed masks in elective surgery wings that were shut down to help with shortage. While Midland Health is currently focused on mass vaccinations at the Horseshoe, which they recently expanded to anyone over the age of 16, Sparks said repeat vaccinations may be needed in the future. We don't know how long this vaccine's going to last, she said. We don't know whether it's going to be an annual vaccine or booster like the flu, or whether it's going to be a 5-year booster like a tetanus shot or shingles or Pneumovax. We just don't know yet. Those are things that are still being vetted. Midland Health CEO and President Russell Myers said mass vaccinations at the Horseshoe will likely end at the end of April or early May as demand continues to decline. The reason we're having a mass vaccination site is to get a lot of people in a short period of time, and I'm just afraid we're going to be doing just a few at a time, wherever we can find them, he said. I think we've gotten the people who are motivated, and now we're facing the population who are resistant. Myers said they'll likely shift to providing vaccines to pharmacies and physicians while increasing efforts to educate residents about the vaccine and holding some smaller clinics to reach marginalized populations. There will be a clinic at the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center next Saturday to aid in vaccinating the black community. Early in the pandemic, Myers made the decision to hold press conferences daily that were live streamed through the hospital's Facebook page. One of the things that became clear early on was the community had a real thirst for knowledge and information about the disease, and there was so much noise from the national press. The U.S. president wasn't always giving what felt like good, accurate scientific information, and so we felt like there was a void there that we could fill with the best information we had. Those press conferences moved to weekly as hospitalizations dropped from more than 110 patients to less than 20, but Myers said they plan to continue having briefings. The latest COVID-19 topic debated nationally is variants of the virus. Although the vaccines available have been proven effective against known variants, Wilson said it's likely variants that are resistant to vaccines will emerge. The good news is that the technology to create new vaccines will remain the same, and vaccines for any troublesome variants could be easily mass-produced once the variants are known. But for the time being, as COVID-19 hospitalizations and the positivity rate continue to fall to the lowest levels seen in months, it seems that Midland is entering the new normal. Evidence of this comes from Sparks, who last May told the reporter Telegram she was most looking forward to seeing her children and grandchildren when it was safe to do so. On Wednesday, she said she'd seen them. We've all either had COVID and have antibodies or we're vaccinated. So we are celebrating birthdays and we're celebrating holidays together, she said. City leaders ready to get back to normal business after a year of COVID. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. After a year spent addressing and trying to manage the COVID-19 crisis, Midland city leaders said they're ready to return to a normal routine and lay out plans for the next fiscal year. For four members of the city council, Mayor Patrick Payton and council members Jack Ladd, Lori Blong, and John Norman, their first year in office was consumed by an unprecedented pandemic and oil market crash. When we were campaigning, we were looking at an economy that was running red hot, and we were really looking forward to putting in place long-term plans for the growth of the city and to make sure we were prepared for the future, Payton said in a phone interview. I don't think anybody, including myself, had any idea we would face anything like we're facing. Plans to repair roads and improve infrastructure were slowed down as the council instead approved CARES Act funding for organizations affected by the economic downturn, and Midland Memorial Hospital created a small business grant program and landlord assistance program, debated mask mandates, and allotted funds for hotel rooms so homeless individuals with COVID could isolate. One sign of a return to normal city business came Thursday as the council heard department heads outline their priorities for this fiscal year at the annual city council retreat, which was canceled in 2020 because of virus concerns. Not having the retreat last year and discussing goals with department heads made it difficult to create long-term plans as a unified entity. And it was hard to have conversations in the vacuum of COVID that was sucking the life out of everything, Payton said. All of us kind of flew blind last year, council member Scott Duford said at Thursday's special meeting. He told the reporter Telegram earlier this week that I have 20 years of crisis in me just after serving on the city council this one year. But city leaders appear to be putting the pandemic in the past on Thursday as they discussed priorities that include replacing the city's stormwater system, repaving roads, adding more staff to the police and fire departments, and a rehab project for Midland International Airport. What we're hoping for is sort of a return to a little bit of normalcy in the council routine and to reboot the processes. Payton said the city will move into a more minor role in addressing COVID-19, but will continue participating in the unified command team and seeking guidance from health officials. They'll also assess what programs and protocols created during the pandemic will remain in place. We're just going to have to keep an eye on all of it, Payton said. What it is that we might have to maintain, what it is we might have to cancel, or even what it is we might have to restructure. 191 Barrier Project to start Monday. a project to build nearly 13 miles of high-tension cable barrier between Odessa and Midland is scheduled to start Monday. The cable barrier will be placed in the median between the main lanes of Highway 191. The project begins at East Loop 338 in Odessa and ends about a half mile from Loop 250 in Midland. The work will start near East Loop 338 and be done in 2-mile segments. Lane closures are possible at different stages of the project, but an effort will be made to minimize impact to the traveling public. Lane closures cannot begin before 8 a.m. and cannot extend past 5 p.m., according to the plans. Unforeseen circumstances may make isolated exceptions necessary. There will be times when large commercial vehicles, especially cement trucks, enter and leave the roadway near the work zone. Motorists are asked to use extreme caution in the work zone. The project is scheduled to take about 7 months and should be completed in the fall of 2021. Jury sentences man to 60 years for intoxication manslaughter. From staff reports. A Midland County jury found Jesus Albino Rodriguez guilty of intoxication manslaughter and sentenced him to 60 years in prison for causing the death of Carlos Mora in August 2019, according to a press release from the district attorney's office. The jury heard evidence that Rodriguez was driving on the wrong side of I-20, traveling toward Midland, causing other drivers to swerve out of the way for more than 5 miles before hitting Mora's vehicle. Mora was killed instantly. The press release stated evidence showed Rodriguez had been to Jaguar's Gold Club and Rick's Cabaret in Odessa. A blood analysis confirmed his blood alcohol level was 0.17, over twice the legal limit, according to the DA's office. MPD arrests man involved in fatal crash on Highway 80. Midland police arrested a man they believe is involved in a crash Thursday morning that killed an Odessa man. A city spokesperson wrote Friday that MPD developed information from evidence at the crash scene that led to the identification of a vehicle involved in the collision and then located the subject. Jacob Nathaniel Gutierrez was arrested and charged with accident involving death, a second-degree felony. On Thursday, city officials reported that 33-year-old Jacob Miranda Martinez of Odessa died earlier in the morning after a crash on Highway 80 near Midland International Airport. During the course of the investigation, it was determined that Martinez's Honda was traveling eastbound on the South Service Road, where it collided with another vehicle which had fled the scene. COVID's impact on academics will stay with MISD for years, by Stuart Doreen. 1 year after COVID first hit Midland, What's new Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey thinking about? Academic recovery. The type of recovery that Ramsey believes will take place will not be easy or brief. In fact, she believes it will take 3 academic years for her to feel comfortable that we have accelerated students to the place where they can catch up. She described long-term recovery as a balance in teaching and reviewing that will force educators to adjust their methods. She said life after COVID will require additional professional development for teachers because we have taught our teachers the standard. They are not taught to look back at standards from the year before. Accelerating student learning also will require professional development for campus leaders as well, she said. She said it is important for state and federal leaders to realize this will be a multi-year endeavor and that will require dollars spread out over those 3 years. What might have been the most controversial part of education during the pandemic was Midland Online Academy. It was once heralded by Midland ISD leadership as the wave in the future, but within a couple of months, it became evident that those expectations would not be met. Midland ISD leaders told the Reporter-Telegram in the fall about lower student participation rates, higher failure rates, and increased stress on parents and teachers alike. The complaints caused then-interim Superintendent Ann Dixon to call students back quicker than anticipated. That callback didn't please everyone, as some Midland ISD secondary teachers wanted to keep their virtual Fridays and planning time. The protests outside central office in November didn't prove to be successful. This past week, Ramsey said conversations are still taking place at the state level about next year and the possibility that school districts could have to offer a 21-22 online Academy. She said, based on those conversations, there is a possibility of some type of mandated elementary school academy, but the conversations are still preliminary. Her expectation is that the only online academy at the secondary level will be a planned online element for students at Coleman High School. Midland ISD reported that its online academy topped 4,000 students in the fall. This past week, the district reported 1,294 students at the elementary level and 1,993 at the secondary school. Community calendar. Spring starts today. In the Northern Hemisphere, the March equinox, aka spring equinox or vernal equinox, occurs when the sun crosses the equator line heading north. This event marks the start of spring in the northern half of the globe. March equinox, start of spring, happens at 4:37 a.m. March 20th. June solstice, start of summer, is 10:32 p.m. June 20th. Upcoming meetings. Midland County, 9 a.m. Monday, Midland County Courthouse. Midland ISD, 5:30 p.m. Monday, Bowie Fine Arts Academy. City Council, 10 a.m. Tuesday, Council Chambers, City Hall. Hospital District, 11:30 a.m. Thursday, Administration Boardroom. Community Roundup. Representative August Pfluger will hold a town hall at 5:30 p.m. Monday at the Bush Convention Center. Virtual Civil Legal Clinic for Veterans, 5:30 p.m. Tuesday. Issues discussed will include divorce, child support, property taxes, guardianship, wills, and loss of benefits. The clinic will be held via Zoom and pre-registration is required. League Baseball's Pitch, Hit, and Run Skills Competition, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, Momentum Bank Ballpark. Four age divisions, 7 to 8, 9 to 10, 11 to 12, 13 to 14. Bust a Bird for the Y, benefiting the YMCA annual campaign, March 22nd at Windwalker Farms. March for Meals for Senior Life, Midland, March 27th. The walk will be virtual. 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War Commemoration Ceremony, 10 a.m. March 29th, Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Participants are asked to RSVP by Thursday. Great American Cleanup and Don't Mess with Texas Trash Off Appreciation Picnic, 10:30 to 12:30, April 1st. The cleanup takes place through May 31st. 47th Annual Crystal Ball benefiting High Sky Girls High Sky Children's Ranch, April 17th at the Petroleum Club. Midland YMCA On Course for Our Cause Golf Tournament, May 4th, Ranchland Hills Golf Club. Basin PBS will host Marty Stewart and his fabulous band for a street party on May 6th. Tickets are $70. The Aphasia Center is hosting its annual Aphasia Awareness Concert on May 7th at the Horseshoe. Queen Nation, a Queen tribute band, will perform. Timeline. COVID events that impacted Midland in 2020 and 2021. 2021. March 19th. A year after Midland County's first confirmed COVID case, the Midland Health Department reported there had been 16,829 total cases and 247 deaths. March 17th, Midland Health announces that Midland County residents age 16 and over could schedule an appointment to be vaccinated. It is extremely important that we get vaccines in arms to achieve our ultimate goal of herd immunity, Midland Health reported. March 11th. President Biden signed the American Rescue Plan Act, $1.9 trillion, coronavirus aid and stimulus package. The bill included $24.2 million for the city of Midland and $34.3 million for Midland County. March 10th, statewide mask mandate and business capacity limits put in place by Governor Greg Abbott come to an end. March 8th, Midland Health closed the Golf Course Church of Christ vaccination site because of a lack of volunteers and the departure of Team Rubicon. February 15th, Midland Health opened second mass vaccination site, Golf Course Road Church of Christ. February 9th, the Midland City Council approved creating an assistance program for landlords whose tenants are not paying rent because of the COVID pandemic and economic downturn. January 26th, the county, the city of Midland began accepting applications for its micro grant assistance program, which will provide $10,000 grants to small businesses hurt by the coronavirus. January 25th, the Midland Unified Command Team began vaccinations for phases 1A and 1B. January 22nd, Midland Health opened its COVID-19 mass vaccination hub for a soft rollout, vaccinating about 240 people. Ramped up efforts started the following Monday, January 25th, with a goal of averaging 1,000 vaccinations a day. January 13th, the percentage of COVID patients inside hospitals across Midland-Odessa region drops down to 11.7% of total occupancy, the second lowest of all 22 regions across the state. 2020, December 17th, Midland Health received 1,950 doses of the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine, and staff immediately began administering those vials to hospital workers. December 15th, the Midland City Council budgeted $1 million to assist small businesses affected by the virus pandemic. December 2nd, Midland Health is authorized to provide an experimental antibody treatment for newly diagnosed high-risk COVID patients. Officials later say the treatment has been effective and only a handful of the hundreds who received it required hospitalization. November 30th, the Midland Health Department reported 314 COVID-19 cases on November 30th, the most reported on any one day during the pandemic. November 23rd, the Midland City Council rejected a second round of proposals related to the enforcement of COVID-19 guidelines, even as businesses prepared to return to 50% occupancy because of a state order regarding high number of hospital inpatients with the virus. November 22nd, the percentage of rooms with COVID patients in the trauma service area that includes Midland and Odessa reaches 18%, the highest mark of the pandemic. November 21st, the Midland Health Department reported there were 1,167 COVID cases, the most November 15th to 21, the most of any week during the pandemic. November 17th, the Midland City Council rejected an ordinance that would have required businesses to enforce mask wearing or face a $500 fine. Mayor Patrick Payton put the item on the council agenda to have a conversation in the community about COVID and the need to wear a mask. September 17th, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, standing outside a bar at the time, responded to an executive order from Greg Abbott saying that Midland was open for business. September 12th, Midland Health Department officials announced the only 79 COVID cases during the entire week from September 6th to 12th. August 3rd, MISD announces its school year will start with at least 4 weeks of learning at home for all students. July 30th, organizers of the Permian Basin International Oil Show announced that the event is postponed until October 2021. July 24th, Baker Hughes said the U.S. rig count dropped 2 to 251 for the week, setting a 12th consecutive record low since the oilfield services firm began keeping a rig count in 1940. The rig count is down 695 rigs from a year ago. July 1st, Mayor Patrick Payton blasts kings and queens of Washington and Austin, who he believes are filled with exceptions that violate people's civil liberties. When we start picking and choosing what we think is healthy and essential, we destroy livelihoods and we even destroy lives, Payton said. June 18th, the Texas Workforce Commission reported that unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, Midland and Martin counties, rose to 12.4% in May. It was 1.8% in May 2019. June 11th, Jose Gomez, the man accused of stabbing an Asian family in a racially motivated attack at Midland Sam's Club earlier in March, was indicted by Midland County Grand Jury on 3 hate crime charges. May 5th, by a 2-1 vote, the members of the Railroad Commission dismissed the motion by Parsley Energy and Pioneer Natural Resources for a hearing to determine the reasonable market demand for oil, which would have led to pro-rationing the state in the first time in 50 years. May, Midland International Airport officials report that the number of airline flights have dropped by 2/3 and that airport boardings dropped 90% in April. April 26th, Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said the forced push online because of coronavirus will provide a glimpse of what the future will look like as virtual learning will become more common moving forward. April 20, oil prices went negative for the first time in history, closing at a -$37.63 a barrel. March 24th, a man in his 60s who was the first Midland County resident to test positive for COVID-19 was the first to die because of the virus issues. March 19th, the City of Midland confirmed that Midland Memorial Hospital received its first confirmed COVID case. The patient was a man in his 60s. March 19th, Crane County announced the first case of coronavirus in the Permian Basin. The person was identified as a Crane County man and employed by the University of Texas, the Permian Basin. March 18th, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton issued a disaster declaration because of the threat from the coronavirus. The declaration stated that gatherings for any event, common endeavor, or business operation will be limited to 50 people or fewer, except for certain circumstances. March 14th, 2 days before being set to return from spring break, Midland ISD officials announced students would not be returning to campus because of the coronavirus. March 14th, Jose Gomez, 19, allegedly attempted to kill three family members, including two children under the age of 10, and assaulted a Sam's Club employee who tried to intervene during a racially motivated attack. He later told police he stabbed the family because he believed they were Chinese and affecting people with the coronavirus. Compiled by editor Stuart Doreen. Obituaries and death notices. Anna L. Washam, 73 of Midland, passed away Monday, March 15th at Midland Memorial Hospital. No services are scheduled at this time. Clyde Clifton Bug Govan, Jr., 51 of Midland, passed away on March 15th in Dallas. Services will be at 2 p.m. Monday, March 22nd at Goodwill Missionary Baptist Church. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Ronald Charles St. John entered heaven March 14th. Funeral service will be March 26th at 11 a.m. at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Burial will follow at 12 noon at Lawn Haven Memorial Gardens in Clovis. In lieu of flowers, a family requests donations be made to Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Rose Mary Maudlin Goggins, 66 of Silsby, died Friday, March 12th. A gathering of Goggins family and friends will be at 5 p.m. until 8 p.m. Monday, March 22nd at Broussard's in Silsby. Her funeral service will be at 1 p.m. Tuesday, March 23rd at First Baptist Church in Silsby, with her interment to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery in Silsby. Angel Ramon Arenivas passed away March 17th. Visitation will be held Sunday, March 21st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be Monday, March 22nd at San Miguel Archangel Church in Midland. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Mark Dwayne Sadler, 62, passed away March 17th. Funeral service will be held Wednesday, March 24th at 11 a.m. at Goodwill Baptist Church in Midland. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, March 20th, 2021. Section A. OPD Sergeant Charged with Assault. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit stated a 31-year-old OPD sergeant assaulted his spouse to the point where she needed 18 stitches to her upper right eyebrow. Polo Eduardo Frescas, 31, was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. At 6 a.m. March 14th, officers were notified by Medical Center Hospital there was an assault victim, the affidavit stated. The victim was identified as a sworn police officer with injuries to the face above the right eyebrow, and several contusions to the head. The probable cause never details the name of the police officer that was assaulted by her spouse. In a previous story, the Odessa American spoke with Frescas and his spouse, Elizabeth, when she graduated from the 18th session of the Odessa Police Academy in 2019. OPD detailed in a press release that Polo Frescas was put on administrative leave without pay as the incident is under investigation. The Odessa American issued a Freedom of Information request from the city of Odessa if Elizabeth Frescas was also placed on administrative leave as the investigation continues. When OPD spokesperson Corporal Steve Lesser was asked over the phone Friday morning if Polo Frescas was still on administrative leave without pay, or if Elizabeth Frescas was placed on administrative leave, he said the Odessa American would need to submit a Freedom of Information request. The Odessa American issued a Freedom of Information request at 9:17 a.m. March 17th for the status of Elizabeth Frescas. The victim reported March 14th after frequenting a nightclub with her spouse that they returned to their residence, the affidavit stated. An argument took place between the two that escalated to Polo Frescas assaulting his wife. The victim reported to another sworn female officer that responded to MCH that she was punched in the face and head by her spouse, which caused a cut on her forehead and bruising to her head. MCH staff detailed in the affidavit that the victim needed 18 stitches to the upper right eyebrow, which caused permanent disfigurement. Frescas was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center at 3:03 p.m. March 16th after a warrant was issued for his arrest on March 14th. He had one bond totaling $35,000 and posted bail March 17th.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read another front page story from the Odessa American, published Saturday, March 20th, 2021. Murry reviews a year of striving for district. From quickly pivoting from in-person to remote learning and helping to bridge the digital divide, Superintendent Scott Murry reviewed the past year in a live virtual broadcast earlier this week. The event was aired on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Murry said this was the first annual State of the District address. Ector County ISD is led by a seven-member board of trustees, and Murry said he considers it an honor to serve with them. The district covers 906 square miles and serves 32,000 students on 43 campuses. Last year, they ended the year with 34,000 students. Of those, 78% are Hispanic, he said. Students speak 32 languages. The 2,000 students not in class are mostly in pre-kindergarten or kindergarten, Murry said Thursday. ECISD has 4,034 employees, and of those, 1,928 are teachers. The district occupies 5 million square feet of space, including schools and other district buildings. ECISD has a budget of $342 million. As of February, 71% of students are in person. In October 2020, it was 62% in person. It was little more than a year ago that the pandemic hit and schools shut down. Murry said he was proud of the district's COVID response. The district provided devices to students and the technology department provided support. Nurses, counselors, principals, and police officers checked on students. Parents lost jobs. There was a lot of fear. But the students knew the district was thinking about them and had their best interest at heart. Family assistance help also was established. A child care facility was established at Zavala Elementary School for doctors and nurses. Career and technical education teachers and students used equipment they had to create, personal protective equipment supplies, and equipment for medical personnel. The child nutrition team serves students breakfast and lunch 5 days a week for free and continues to do so. They also provide home delivery and meals on holiday and spring break. The ECISD Board of Trustees made sure 100% of staff was paid during the pandemic. Last March, Murray said ECISD planned to launch its strategic plan, but COVID-19 hit. However, Murray said it didn't change the body of work. Growing its own teachers and offering incentives is another way the district is striving to improve, Murray said. Austin Montessori teacher Brooke Adrian is going through national board certification process for teachers. Adrian said only 3% of teachers nationwide are national board certified. I just started a few months ago, Adrian said. There's a lot of support. Adrian added that the program is nationwide and it gives teachers a chance to network and learn best practices. The process takes about a year and a half, but she said it puts you in the top tier.
ORMC Community Health Center halts COVID-19 testing indefinitely. Odessa Regional Medical Center's Community Health Center will no longer provide walk-in COVID-19 testing. There are several testing resources available in the community, including clinics, urgent cares, ERs, labs, pharmacies, and private doctor's offices. The city's free testing at Floyd Gwynn Park is also still available, a news release said. COVID-19 testing is still available to the patients in our ER and at our Steward Medical Group and Complete Care Clinics, which can be found on the website. The CHC will continue to concentrate its efforts solely on vaccinations without putting those individuals at risk of being exposed by those seeking testing, the release said. Police looking for man connected to hit and run with stolen vehicle. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a man involved in a hit-and-run with a stolen vehicle. The reported incident happened March 17th in the 4200 block of North Dixie, an OPD press release stated. A man stole a vehicle and later committed a hit-and-run with it in the area of 31st and Roger Avenue. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyurl.com/43TTYCXC. Anyone with information is asked to contact Hit and Run investigator T. Yelly at 432-435-5759 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. And reference case number 21-0004243. Performances. The Midland Odessa Symphony Orchestra will perform Beethoven's 8th, formerly Tchaikovsky 4, for the finale of its Masterworks series, 7:30 p.m. April 10th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Due to unforeseen circumstances, the title and program reportedly had to be changed, and Tchaikovsky 4 tickets will be honored for entrance into Beethoven's 8th. Masks are required for entrance, and seating will be socially distanced. Tickets start at $10 and can be purchased at mosc.org. Student tickets are free with a paying adult or valid college ID. For more information on MOSC events, visit mosc.org. Seliger request to visit emergency intake site denied. State Senator Kel Seliger's request to visit the emergency intake site at the Cotton Logistics Man Camp in Midland County has been turned down. But Seliger, Republican Amarillo, said he plans to go anyway, probably sometime today. He said they didn't give him a reason why. He said he intends to point out to them that he has been a visitor at a number of maximum security prisons and a nuclear weapons plant. He has a bill set that would have private property owners notify cities or counties if a detention facility is going to pop up. Seliger said in an interview Thursday that if a facility is going to be opened for minors, it should have wastewater and drinking water available and on-site medical and dining facilities and security. He said the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has 25 people working on this, and he was told that the emergency intake site has never been permitted as far as water goes, and TCEQ has told the site water cannot be used for cooking. A news conference on the emergency intake site was held Monday. Midland County officials didn't know about it until Sunday. The deadline to file bills passed a week ago, Seliger said. I will have to have a supermajority to get a bill referred to committee after the deadline, and it just depends on what my colleagues think, Seliger said Thursday. Obituary for Saturday, March 20th. Antonia Tony Alvarado. Antonia Tony Ritz Alvarado, 92, passed away peacefully in her home in Odessa, Saturday, March 13th. Tony was born November 23rd, 1928, in McDonough, Texas, to Rodolfo Ritz II and Francisca Ceballos Ritz. She was the oldest of 15 children. Tony married Gregorio S. Alvarado in 1957 in Roswell, New Mexico, and they settled in Odessa that same year. She is survived by her daughters, Judy, Gloria, Sandra and husband John, and Brenda, 10 grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren, sisters Carmen, Mary, and Lola, brothers Alfred and wife Lena, Joe and wife Dolores, Felipe and wife Lourdes, Meliton, Luis and Gilbert and wife Belinda, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. Tony was preceded in death by her husband, Gregorio, her father, Rodolfo, her mother, Francisca, brothers Pascual, Rudy, and Jose, and sisters Anita and Antonia. A viewing will be held Sunday, March 21st, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. A memorial service will be held Monday, March 22nd at 10 a.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Rose Hill Cemetery. Death notices. Joyce Matlock Randall. Joyce Matlock Randall, 82, of Gardendale, died Wednesday, March 17th in Odessa. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, March 22nd at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Maria Guadalupe Vivar. Maria Guadalupe Vivar, 71, of Midland, died Thursday, March 11th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, March 21st, 2021. Section A. Unused drilling sites eyed for housing. Plots inside city pose mystery of mineral owners. By Bob Campbell. Grow Odessa, formerly the Odessa Industrial Development Corporation, is mulling a plan to make use of the 266 prospective oil and gas drilling sites around town that have lain vacant for decades, often accumulating trash that makes them an eyesore. A committee has been named to consider the proposal, but there are obstacles, particularly the need to get mineral owners to cooperate when the owners on just one well often run into the scores and have to be sorted out from county records by landmen. Grow Odessa board member Dick Gillum is the leading proponent, saying a broad enactment of the plan would rejuvenate the city. Gillum says the plots could be especially useful for housing developments and new businesses. The retired crane company owner says the surface owners and mineral owners are the same at some properties in the city of Odessa's drill site map legend, but in most instances they're different, with the mineral owners still needing to be identified. The sites are all over town, with the exception of the area bounded by JBS Parkway on the east I-20 on the south, County Road West on the west, and University Boulevard on the north. Gillum said Midland attorney Paul Baxter had been contacted about scoping out the mineral owners and making other preparations, but the project is still in the preliminary stage, with $100,000 in seed money possibly needed from the $18 million in reserves that Grow Odessa has derived from its industrial development park south of I-20. Asked how mineral owners could be persuaded, Gillum said, "We might have to change the law. We'd have to work with the surface owners on financial deals, and we could dedicate some acreage outside the sites for horizontal drilling. The main thing would be housing, which would increase tax revenues with no additional cost to the city because the sewer and streets are already there." Gillum said the best approach would be to pick an area or two to start in and work out from there. "People have been talking about this for years, but nobody has gone forward with it," he said. "It would take a lot of research to find out who the mineral owners are." Former County Commissioner Eddie Shelton, a Grow Odessa board member, said it is hard to know the feasibility of it because we have not gotten down to the cost per acre. "Something needs to be done with this uncaptured surface land, and Dick has done a great job of realizing what is out there," Shelton said. "Hats off to him for the love of the community that he has. He's put together a good assortment of maps, but there are so many different property owners involved that my preference is to take it piece by piece. Take the choicest ones and see if they're feasible. Some legal services will be required, and we have not come to an agreement on that. We're in the infancy stage, and we have to see if the benefits would outweigh the cost." Shelton is on the committee that's pondering Gillum's proposal with Dr. Jimmy Goetz and Drew Crutcher, who said the plan would be a tough row to hoe. Grow Odessa's executive board has 10 members, and its board of directors, 26, with an all-star cast of business leaders, including Odessa American publisher Patrick Canty. This has been discussed from time to time, going back to when we were the OIDC, Crutcher said. "We need more housing around town. And there was an effort not too long ago to see about these drill sites and do something. We need to contact the leaseholders and mineral owners to see if we can agree on something to free up some sites. I don't know what they will want to do or for what amount." Crutcher said properties north of East 42nd Street and west of Grandview Avenue could be a starting point. The city talked with Ted Stewart's heirs about building a fire station there and couldn't make a deal with them, he said. The cosmic dust has not yet coalesced in the form of planning. Baxter told us it would be an expensive process and a hard thing to get done. There are 23 sites in the part of Northeast Odessa that's in Midland County and whose surface owners are unspecified on the city map. The 107 surface owners identified on the map are the city with 51 plots, Stewart Estate 28, Occidental Permian 11, most of them west of County Road West and south of 16th Street, UTPB 9, CMM 2007 5X5 Trust 8, James R. Hurt 7, ECISD and Methodist Orphans Home 6 each, Harry R. Dieter 5, and Cardinal Homes Family Dollar Distribution, Verna S. Headley, Houston Endowment, Union Pacific Railroad, and Walmart Stores, 4 each. Also, ARCO Environmental Remediation, Ector County, Gordon Headley Jr., P. Bar Parks Bell Ranch, and Texaco EP, 3 each, and Brown Wiley Construction, CA New Plan Texas Assets, Jack N. Musa, Ann Rich Smith, and Trustee Margaret Lynn Greedy, MCM Properties, Permian Basin Land Development, SMI 2007 5X5 Trust, Tropicana Limited, and University Gardens Joint Venture, 2 each. Also with 1 each, S.J. Properties, Antioch Christian Church, Mary Frances Barrow, Shirley A. Bartels, Reuben L. and Norma Berdoza, Eldon Blunt Construction, Alan Brandon, Bronco Chevrolet, Calvary Baptist Church, Commonwealth Chartered Trust, H.E. Davis Family Partnership, Tom Davis Trust, DMAC Family, Fernando Dominguez, ECISD Trustee, Tommy Fambro, Four Star Oil and Gas, Ashley Garcia, Billy Jack Glover, Alita Gonzalez, Regal Gordon, Harold L. and Wadana Groomer, and Emmett Vincent Headley II. Also James and Gordon E. Headley, James E. Headley, Thomas and Claudia Headley, HP Real Estate Venture, I-20-385 Development, Jesus and Sophia Ibarra, ICA Properties, Investment Corporation of America, Susan Elaine Ivy, Bobby Jackson, Knighton Service and Supply, Lico Properties, Harvey Lavario Jr., Life Challenge United Pentecostal Church, Lithia Real Estate, Mardeb LLC, Maxim Hospitality, Catherine Marie McKnight, Myrna Mendoza, Mesa Real Estate Partners, MIRC, Morrison Group, and North Park Plaza. Also, Northeast Odessa Development, NWC Development, Odessa Affordable Housing, Odessa Christian Faith Center, Odessa Development Corporation, Odessa Housing Finance Corporation, Odessa Industrial Development Corporation, Odessa Youth Baseball Association, Encore Electric Development, Stephen H. Parker, Permian Realty, Clyde P. Philpott, Pomeroy R.O. Equipment Rental, PPR Properties, Ronald D. Raines, Ratliff Ranch Company, Rebecca Lucille Stumpfill, Exempt GS Trust, and Riodessa Development Group. Also, Tommy Sandlin, Salisbury Ventures, Billy June Sawyer, Clara Eileen Sissel, Marcella Jean Stoker, T. Summer Breeze Incorporated, Temple Baptist Church, Texas Lone Star Storage Centers, Joanne Margaret Verkin, Sherry Ward, West Texas Boring, Westminster Presbyterian Church, Gary Whitehead, and Dwayne C. Youngblood.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.